Hi, it's Sierra Miller. I can't wait for you to check out my new collection of shoes and accessories at Designer Shoe Warehouse. If you love shoes as much as I do, then trust me, I got you. From cute sneakerinas to the perfect flip-flops to stunning heels, these shoes are all style, no drama. It's a girl's girl summer, and DSW has just the shoes. Shop the Sierra Miller collection right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Basketball, a game of giants. And there's number 99, George Mikan, one of the greatest.
Perhaps the most complete player the game has ever seen. The Lakers captain, Elgin Baylor.
2 seconds, 1 second. West throws it up.
Jerry West made it from the other side of the mid-point stripe.
Ford sends it to Kareem. Sky hook up and good. Lakers win.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Shaquille fade away.
Bryant for the win. James puts up the three. Oh, it's good.
Doncic on the drive. Step back. Puts it up. Puts it in. With 5 tenths of a second remaining.
What's up, Laker fans? You're listening to the Laker Film Room podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And D, in the last pod that I did with Mike Garcia, I was talking about how one of the best parts of the draft is when you hope and root for a certain guy to drop and he does, and then your favorite team drafts him. And I recounted a story of when Nick Van Exel got drafted by the Lakers with the 37th pick in the 93 draft. That basically happened last night as the Lakers move up one spot, trading 25 and cash considerations to the New York Knicks for the 24th pick and select Cameron Carr, a swingman out of Baylor. We're going to get into his attributes, his strengths and weaknesses and all that. But unfortunately, you weren't able to make those pods with Garcia, but that's part of the reason why I can't wait to hear what you have to say. You know how much I love the blink reaction to a player, just your first impression. So what are your thoughts on the Lakers drafting Cam Carr?
So first of all, Pete, I texted you maybe 12 picks into the draft. So we're about halfway there. And it's been mostly chalk, but there was the Maurice Johnson pick at 9. Ament went at, I think, 13. There's a bunch of guys that in the various mock drafts seemed like they were all going to be like readily available by the time the Lakers picked. And I was watching the ESPN coverage. They keep going back to like Filon and Cameron Carr because they were two of the higher rated prospects as the teams went on that weren't getting selected. By the time we got to pick 20 and the Spurs took the Kentucky big man, who I was sort of talking to you about, is just like, oh man, this guy looks like he's a lottery talent, but has injury concerns. It turns out today we learned that he's still dealing with knee soreness and might need another small procedure on his knee. That's Quaintance. But at pick 13, I was just like, what are you hoping for basically 10, 12 picks from now? And you responded right away, I hope Cameron Carr keeps falling and that he's there for us. And so as every pick went off the board, I'm just like, oh, he's still there. He's still there. And then when the Knicks were about to select, I was just refreshing my Twitter page, just like, okay, like who's going to break the news? What's going on here? And then I saw that the Lakers traded for the pick. And I was just like, oh, they're definitely going to do something right here. I wonder if it's to get Carr. And it totally was. And so, first of all, I was excited for you.
Thank you. It was nice, man. I had to manifest that moment, right? That's part of the reason I told that story is like, it's one of the best parts of the draft is being like, oh, please, one more. And then when it was the Knicks in Atlanta, I was sure one of those teams was going to take him. And you were like, I think Atlanta might need a big. Sure enough, they take Zubi, which is great because they like to switch a lot. And I think he's perfect as a backup five in their scheme. But I'm like, no, the Knicks are definitely going to take this kid. But yeah, then you hit me like, oh, we're on the clock. I'm like, what? And then it becomes that point of like, please don't pass on the guy that I want. And sure enough, man.
If they were going to draft someone else that was random, right?
Sure.
Anyways, then I started to just watch highlights. Highlight reels could be deceiving. You could create a 10-minute highlight reel of anyone you want. But the thing that instantly stood out to me about him was A, the sort of like straight line athleticism that he has and the leaping ability, right? And so when he gets downhill, transition, or even in the half court where he racks a close out and the help is like there, but maybe a little bit late, he has the chops just go up and just finish right over the top of these guys. But The other thing that stood out to me was just sort of the effortless ball that he shoots from long range and the natural arc that he has on his shot. And it's sort of like a medium load shot. Like he doesn't shoot it from above his head and he's got good elevation on his jumper. But in the clips I was watching, he was pulling up from deep NBA range.
Yeah. He's got 4-point range. Yeah.
And I was just like, okay, this kid is stepping in to 26, 27 footers and shooting a really effortless ball in that way. And so the idea of having an athlete like him who can play in transition, could catch a lob here or there, can rack a closeout at least and get to the basket and finish with force and with power, but also a guy who can be a spot-up threat or even a movement shooter threat, but do it from distances that are well beyond the arc and how that can impact spacing. Those are the two things that I was just like, oh, these things instantly stood out to me. I can see why this guy's getting drafted in the first round or why, like, you might be high on him.
Yeah, and, you know, I've been talking so much about concerns about the team's athleticism and especially in the backcourt that, you know, take the Dallas team that went to the finals with Luka a couple of years back, and they started from a Luka Kyrie standpoint, which is not too far from a Luka Austin standpoint. I think Austin and Kyrie are very comparable athletically, and Austin's got a little more size to him. But to kind of make up for starting out a little bit behind there, you've got Derrick Jones Jr. in that lineup, and you've got Daniel Gafford playing a major role where if you've got some real plus athletes, all of a sudden you're right back to the median collectively athletically, and I think you're really in business. And so adding a guy like Carr, he's just got such a high-level athlete to the backcourt swingman type of – super interesting physical attributes, D. I guess I'd want to start there is that he's got – the weight of a point guard, but the wingspan of a power forward and the height of a 2'3", right? He's 6'4.5" without shoes on, but the nearly 7'1" wingspan. Imagine having your arms 8 inches longer than how tall you are. Most people, it's about the same wingspan as you are tall, but like he could scratch his kneecap without leaning over. Just got incredible length that he uses it more as a shot blocker than he does as a steals guy and all of that. But he provides a certain aerial threat where I've brought up a few times on the pod recently that tip-in that OG got of like, you got to be able to compete in that realm of basketball, 11.5, 12 feet in the air against these super high-level athletes that he can go get that ball, right? He can at least compete in that range that – when we'll go over more of his strengths and weaknesses and all of that, but really adding a plus level athlete the year after you get a Adu. And in a lot of ways, like last year was a redshirt year for a Adu. So this year's upcoming roster, I think, adds two premium athletes at two different spots that also bring two different skill sets. And then with respect to his offensive game and his 3-point shooting, he shoots threes off of a bunch of different types of footwork and from that distance that you're talking about. Like he killed it in the scrimmage that they did at the NBA Combine. They do a few of those. And I love watching those games because it's all guys competing for jobs. It's like really high level pickup games in some ways because they've never played with each other, but everybody's really playing for something. And he was by far the best dude on the floor, had 30 points in that game, went 12 of 18 from the field, but got 12 threes up in part because he can do it off of movement. He can do it pull up in transition. And then just lastly, when we'll get more into the how he fits in with the team and all of that. The Lakers were the slowest team in the NBA last year by speed via second spectrum. And one of the ways that really manifested over the course of the season was we didn't get enough easy buckets. And when you've got such great outlet passing, it's a shame because you've got the opportunity. You got the quarterbacks to do it, but you got to have the receivers that can run the wing and fill the lane. And really, we'd get that off of rim runs, but that was about it. We didn't get a lot of like early offense, first 6 to 8 seconds of the shot clock type of easy baskets. And that was such a prominent part of the playoffs. You watch the Knicks, if you had a bad offensive possession, they were running that the other way and getting a very early bucket. No half-court offense. OKC's like this. San Antonio's like this. Lakers way behind in this respect. I think Carr really adds to that. So let's go to break here, come back, and keep it going.
Parles-tu français?
Hablas español?
Parle italiano.
If you've used Babbel, you would.
Babbel's conversation-based technique teaches you useful words and phrases to get you speaking quickly about the things you actually talk about in the real world. With lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, Babbel is like having a private tutor in your pocket. Start speaking with Babbel today. Get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription right now at babbel.com/listen. Spelled babbel.com/listen. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Not all electric vehicles are designed the same. Toyota Electric is built to work for you. Grounded in years of proven engineering, it feels intuitive from the start. The Toyota BZ for smooth, everyday driving. The BZ Woodland for all-terrain capability. The all-new CHR for an instant, responsive drive. It's not just electric, it's Toyota Electric. We make it easy. Toyota, let's go places.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Yeah, the physical tools, obviously, Pete, in shoes, he's going to be like 6'6", so totally reasonable in terms of wing-sized player. But 8'8 standing reach, 7-foot wingspan. I had sent you a text last night that watching his clips, because we had talked about Trey Murphy as a target, and I was just like, oh, some of his clips are coming off like, oh, well, we got that Trey Murphy at home, right? Like, we don't need to go get a Trey Murphy. But I was comparing their physical traits, and Murphy's much taller. He was, I think, listed at like 6'8.5" without shoes at the combine. So a good 4 inches on Carr, but their wingspan's exactly the same. And their standing reach, Murphy's standing reach was only 1.5 inches higher, even though he's got 4 inches on him. So the idea of having this sort of length and combined with the leaping ability, there's a reason why when you were talking about his defensive playmaking that it shows up in blocks more than steals. That's why.
Mm-hmm.
It's because when he challenges shots at the basket or when he's closing out on you, he gets to shots and can alter or block a shot from an offensive player as sort of a surprise, right? So when you watch some of his defensive highlights, oh, a guard sneaks in, back cut, and he's trying to get a shot off, and Carr just sort of comes and erases it. Or he's just rotating from the backside and just blocks a shot, almost like he's a big man, but those are the tools that he has.
That's super important on a team that switches as much as the Lakers do. We think of rim protection as a big man's job, but if you're switching that much, we just talked in the last pod about how OKC really tried to get Austin and Luke Kennard around the basket as much as possible. Having non-big men who can rotate over and block a shot, which I think is his best defensive attribute. I think he's more of a team defender than if you're expecting a point of attack. I think he's got some ability at this, but he's so slight of build, and that's probably his biggest physical weakness is just he doesn't weigh that much. Hopefully some time in the weight room will help with that. But he can rotate over and really be a presence at the rim in ways that are absolutely essential that you have non-bigs that can do that if you're going to switch a lot.
100% agree with that point. And someone who can compete in the air the way that you were talking about. Like, we'll get to this a little bit more where the parts of his game are not where we'd want them to be, but like rebounding and contested rebounding and like the physicality aspect of things, that's where he needs to improve. He's definitely a guy where it's not like he's avoidant of some of this stuff, but he's just not physically able to sort of get his nose dirty the same way that a guy who's got more of a scrappier build would be able to, right? That said, the point that you were making about the ability to get out in transition, a guy who can like leak out, but then finish in a way where guys are going to let him go, you know? So there's something that could happen where even though the Lakers are good hit ahead passers, sometimes you hit ahead and it's Marcus Smart who's hitting ahead or who's getting the ball out there, or it's Rui And Rui's a good athlete, don't get me wrong, but his sort of like coordination with the ball and his ability to like sort of finish through or over contact is not always there. And so Rui will get challenged on some of these.
Absolutely. And he doesn't have a great vert, right? So it's like he's got that lower to the ground type of style, whereas, you know, a guy like Carr can Euro step and elevate and cause you to make a business decision here and there of like, I don't really want to get in the way of that or I'm going to get dunked on.
Well, I mean, some of the clips that he has, Pete, it's just like he's both a 2 feet and a 1 foot jumper. That's mm-hmm. how you know that he's a real athlete. I've always said that the guys who can do both, they're the real dudes. Right? Like, oh, you're great, but you're only a 2 foot jumper. It's just like, well, guess what? Sometimes you're going to have to go off 1 foot. And if you don't have the same burst there, you're going to get blocked. Right? Anyways, so the possibility for him to run out, catch a leak out, and just finish and bring highlight plays there is something that I'm really looking forward to.
He can also hit that pull-up three, very comfortable stepping into that. And that's become more and more of a popular shot where defenses drop back into the paint on those and you've got an open wing three. That's a very comfortable shot for him.
The trail three, this is something that happens too. When you have effective rim running bigs, or like, let's say even like LeBron, right? And so when LeBron is running that Mack truck lane or Jackson Hayes or whoever, you collapse the defense that way. And it's very easy then to dribble pitch back to a wing who's trailing the play and have that just be an open three. The very interesting thing that I'm looking forward to learning about him over his time with the team, both through summer league, hopefully, and then through training camp and then the regular season, is just like how real the shooting is. Because we should talk about sort of his backstory a little bit. He played a single season at Baylor, but played 2 seasons at Tennessee, didn't start and barely played at all at Tennessee. And then he explodes onto the scene at Baylor. And so he's really only got one really productive college season. And he shot the ball well, but not over 40% well. He was like a 37% three-point shooter. I know that the mechanics are there, the footwork's sure. there. Like, he showed a lot, but it's also like one college season's worth of production. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah, he's a redshirt sophomore with them and had that breakout season. He also had way more of an on-ball role than I think is appropriate for his skill set. Like on the shoot pass dribble matrix, I don't think is great on either the dribble or pass. He can be a little wild at attacking closeouts and kind of get himself into issues in that way, or make wrong decisions that lead to difficult attempts, you know, at the rim, despite being a great athlete, not finishing particularly well off of ball screens or so, you know, because he chose to rack it when somebody's waiting for him there. But I think him being in somewhat of an inappropriate position is a positive in two ways, and that just getting that on-ball repetition is super helpful in terms of experience going forward, and just seeing it over and over again, he very likely improved at that. And then just secondly, I think that's not going to be really his role at all with the Lakers, and he screams finisher to me as a guy that you just want catching and shooting, open threes, relocating off of the ball, cutting to the basket, dunking, all of that, but not somebody that's going to be asked to do nearly as much as he did at Baylor D. And so I think some of those three-point attempts are going to be the result of like, I'm the main on-ball guy, it's late in the shot clock. That's going to knock down a guy's percentage a little bit when he has to self-create as much as he did. But yeah, we'll see in terms of the catch and shoot numbers. But as you said earlier, he has a lot of very promising numbers from that respect. And Sam Bassini had a great stat about how the Baylor was like 27 points per 100 possessions better with him on the floor. And he was especially impactful on the offensive end.
Yeah, you can tell that I feel like he's got a very connective skill set offensively. And the challenging part is when he gets put into a role that is beyond that, then it's going to be a challenge for him. The clips that I saw as well, and that I've been watching both after the draft and then through this morning, definitely did show a guy whose handle is not as tight, whose ability to sort of self-create beyond like a pull-up jumper is not as strong. And a guy who, because of his frame, he's got a wiry strength to him, but if you're just stronger than him, then he's going to get knocked off his line when he drives. So I'm hopeful that the shooting is real enough that will be the skill that allows him to play, right? Particularly in lineups where the Lakers do have enough shot creation on the floor. The one thing I will say about his offensive game, Pete, and I'd love to get your comments on this after the break, is that he seemed to have a very good understanding of relocating and where to reposition himself in order to get to his shots. And he looked like a good cutter in terms of being able to like get to the basket where he didn't have to dribble the ball a lot. And I would say that on a Lakers team, with Luka and then with Austin, now that he's locked into his contract, that's the exact sort of player that you want. It's just like, no, he understands I'm going to slide like a foot and a half to my right here to get into where the passing window is so I can step into a more open three. And I just think that with the shot creation the Lakers project to have, you need that specific feel within your game way more than you need a guy who can create his own shot and be like, oh, let me ISO up and triple threat and jab step and get into my bag.
This is a type of shot creation we almost never talk about, in that you can create shots for yourself off of the ball as a great cutter, but just a simple relocation. If you ever watch a high-level basketball game at court level, it looks totally different than it does on TV. And one of the things that really stands out are the passing windows that come and go. And there are certain times where a player is open, but the guy with the ball can't deliver it to him because there isn't an adequate passing angle. And knowing when to shift a little bit this way or a little bit that way and to get yourself open is just a crucial skill that I'd been ranting really for the last couple of years that we're not good enough at that off of the ball in our corner positions to get in a high enough volume on those.
Let's go to break here, Pete, and when we come back, I want to drill down on that idea even more.
DMV summers are no joke. The heat, the humidity, the beltway at 5 p.m. AC season is here, and your car needs to keep up. Rota is the DMV's most trusted auto shop with over 1,000 five-star Google reviews. From AC checks to oil changes to detailing, we keep your car ready with no hidden fees and no pressure. Plus, free valet pickup and drop-off, so you don't have to lift a finger. Book at rota.com and save 20% on maintenance, repairs, or detailing with code POD20.
Not all electric vehicles are designed the same. Toyota Electric is built to work for you. Grounded in years of proven engineering, it feels intuitive from the start. The Toyota BZ for smooth, everyday driving. The BZ Woodland for all-terrain capability. The all-new CHR for an instant responsive drive. It's not just electric, it's Toyota Electric. We make it easy. Toyota, let's go places.
Isn't it crazy that America is turning 250 years old? I mean, look how far we've come. Now, we've got coolers in our sofas, light-up cup holders, and power-articulating headrests. When it comes to furniture worthy of this major milestone, Bob's Discount Furniture has all the styles all of America wants at the everyday low prices we deserve, backed by tons of five-star reviews. Check out the Sedona Power Reclining Sofa, a genuine leather one-stop shop for relaxation with built-in charging, cup holders, and supportive Bobapedic seats, perfect for lounging in the AC all day. You can even complete the look with the matching love seat and recliner. Throwing summer parties? The Homeworks dining set features comfy Bobapedic seating and clever storage built right into the table and bench. Or customize your space with the customer favorite modular Bob Sectional. It has over 1,000 five-star reviews, family-proof construction, and wireless charging for hundreds less than the competition. At only $250 per piece, building your dream sectional is incredibly affordable. Celebrate the 4th at Bob's. It's where America shops for furniture.
One of the things that we've been talking about is the ability to run five-out offense as much as the team can run four-out offense because they're a great pick-and-roll team. And watching the Knicks really understand their principles of dribble, drive, relocate, attack a closeout, relocate, replace, and how that can stress high-level defenses that are built on protecting the paint and protecting the rim. I just think this is an important skill set that every team needs more of, but particularly the Lakers, is we can get used to sitting and watching while our best player just sort of does stuff at the top of the floor. I think the Lakers need to get away from that a little bit. I understand that these are the strengths of your best players, and so you don't want to act as though, like, well, we're not going to do this at all.
No, this is leveraging the strengths of your best players. This is leveraging that individual brilliance from Luka that is going to make a defense pinch in a little more toward him, or they're doing the same thing. We've had some of the best players in the history of basketball, and one common thread throughout all of them is the tendency for everybody on the court to do exactly what you just said of, like, hey, let's go watch Magic Johnson or Kobe Bryant be absolutely incredible, and heads can get turned, opportunities arise off of that. So this is the taking advantage of that.
It's just such a good point, Pete, and it's totally something that I want to see the Lakers do better. Earlier when you asked me about, like, my blink reaction to him, that was the other thing that honestly stood out most to me, was just like, he's just relocating in very smart ways to get the ball and get a shot off. And a guy who's used to moving off of the ball that way, not in Ray Allen, Reggie Miller, running around, right, coming off floppy, like wide pin down, double draft, like not in that way. Just the, okay, my guy is in help. The ball is moving in this direction. I need to step to my right 3 feet. Now I'm ready to receive the pass, and I'm going to take an open shot here. The other thing that I will say too, Pete, is that there was a shot readiness to him that I think is also super important when playing on a team where the best shot creators are going to really, like, create a lot of advantage and then expect you to finish. The Lakers last year were, what, like one of the lowest passing teams in the league in terms of number of passes per game, while also having three guys who were very capable of getting you double-digit assists on any given night, right? And so that feels like a dichotomy of, we've got all of these guys that know how to pass and can rack up assists while we're barely moving the ball at all, right? And so to me, that's indicative of an offensive style where your finishers better be finishers.
And they better be ready, yeah.
And when it comes to your outside shooters, they need to either keep the blender going the way that Kennard does, right? And so Kennard is always shot ready, but he's a little bit, can be a little bit like, oh, well, this is a little bit too contested for me. Let me rack the close out and I'll continue to create advantage. But you need to also be able to step into a shot that's going to be quasi-contested at times and just feel like, look, I'm going to have the confidence to let this fly.
And he doesn't have a particularly fast release. He'll dip on almost all of his threes, but he's got the standing reach advantage and he's got really good elevation on his jumper. To me, the best guy in the game at this is Michael Porter Jr. MPJ is a little bit faster in his release, but it's more about the fact that he's 6'10 and he jumps high. And when you can get to a certain elevation, it's like, unless that's Wemby closing out on you, there's not many guys that are going to bother that at all. And one other part too that I was thinking from a broader team building standpoint is, last year, the Lakers could either have a lineup on the floor that could shoot, or they could have a lineup on the floor that had a baseline level of athleticism that could compete. They could not have both at the same time. And he can play that spot and have positional size and athleticism while still being able to shoot. And last year it was like, well, we've got Vando and Jackson and Jake on the floor. And so we've got some of our better athletes in the front court and whatnot, but we can't space the floor at all. I really think he helps the Lakers not have to make that either or kind of choice.
Yeah, and for the long term, Pete, and let's be real about this, like, he was drafted 24th overall.
Yes.
He's going to have to prove that he can play. He's not just going to instantly be handed a 25-minute per night role, you know what I mean?
Totally. This is not even if he hits this first year, I'm not expecting him to be a major player in the Western Conference Finals or something like that, right? This is a long-term type of play. That is part of what's bittersweet to me, frankly, about him and Adu, is that I think this is a big year for them, and I think they could both contribute to the regular season, but it would be remarkable if either player were a rotation guy in the Conference Finals type of thing.
Yeah, so that matters. The regular season can be a time of growth, but I think for the long term, what you're hoping to see is a continued refinement of what he does well, a continued understanding of how he needs to build up his body to get stronger, but also that sort of life that he can give to a group through his athleticism, through his finishing ability, and how that can sort of impact the spirit of the moment. Right. And that's a super important part of basketball. Just guys who sort of within the moment of the game keep you engaged by doing something with a flair for the dramatic or just something so stupidly athletic that it's just amazing to watch. Right. And that's why we're fans.
One of my favorite things recently has been people making cracks about how the Knicks won the championship through the power of friendship. Joy and that, oh, my rookie teammate just dunked all over this guy and everybody's on the bench going crazy with their hands on their head. That gets you through a season. That makes everybody closer. And that's his role, right? Is to go out there and be young and jump high and run fast and play hard and knock down open shots. I don't know much about him as a person, and I do wonder to what degree did they interview him. But even those young players, they can really add to the spirit of a team, and it's so important.
For all the it's a long-term play and we'll see what he can do this season, I do think his skill set ultimately does really matter. And someone who can credibly sort of get out there and compete defensively with the athletic tools that he has, which I think is going to be important, while also if that jumper's real and he's able to knock down shots, he can earn a role.
For a rookie to get playing time, I think there can't be too many guys in front of him who do the same thing that he does. And there's nobody in the 1-2-3 spots that is remotely close to what he does. So if you need an athlete out there, if you need somebody that's tall and lanky that can be part of your Air Force, there's nobody else ahead of him. It's not like JHS where we draft him and we got six other dudes we'd give the ball to before we gave to him. Like, I think he's got an opportunity. If he can play, there's minutes available.
Pete, before we wrap up, it's day two of the draft. The Lakers don't currently have a pick in hand, but there could be opportunity for them to maybe try to purchase a pick in this round. How important is that to you? Is it something that you think they should definitely try? Would you be disappointed if they sit this round out? Like, where are you at with this? And what are you looking forward to on day two of the draft from a Lakers perspective?
It would be nice if they bought a pick. I don't think it's absolutely essential. Henry Vissar, the big out of North Carolina, is, I think, the most playable of the guys that I've seen. But this is not somewhere I have a ton of knowledge. But he stood out to me as probably the most fundamentally sound player. He's also probably a one coverage big as a drop coverage guy and isn't super strong. So if you're going to be a one coverage guy and it's drop, you probably have to be a little bit stronger. And that's why he's available in the second round. But he can space out to the perimeter, can make jump hooks with either hand. Like, he'd be the guy that I would target if they were going to go that route. But I wouldn't be disappointed if they don't buy a pick. How do you feel about this second round?
Yeah, I'm sort of where you are. The Lakers have traditionally been a team that tries to buy itself into the second round to get a pick. I will say, though, Pete, that there's so much roster movement to happen still. Mm-hmm. When you mentioned earlier the idea of just like, oh, well, for a rookie to play, he needs to not have many guys in front of him. The prospect of the Lakers having another young guy on their team, particularly when Dalton is still on the team, they have to make a decision on Nick Smith's contract because that's a non-guaranteed contract for next year. And then Bronny has a partial guarantee on his deal. And then you have a due as well. And so do we really think the Lakers are going to carry four young players on their team if they were to draft a guy in the second round? That doesn't sound likely to be. So and that's not including Dalton. Mm-hmm. Right. And so when you talk about depth on the team, and this is a point that JJ hammered home, we need to improve that part of the roster. And if you're carrying four or five young guys, are they really going to play?
All of that's true, but you also get a ton of value if you could find a guy who could play in the second round. And if he's our 13th man this year, that's fine. Either way, welcome to the Lakers, to Cameron Carr. Got plenty to talk about as we approach free agency. That's the next big step, less than a week away before all of it kicks off. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
James has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn his double team. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
Yes, Magic got it. Magic fires again, and the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
on the ladder. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two. One. Miss it.
Unbelievable. For the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yeah.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.